Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Bring us in, babe.
Welcome to
Coco Caliente.
Babe, you're just bossy.
You're awfully giggly today.
You're bossy.
How am I bossy?
Because he wants to have all the settings perfect, and if I do a noise like this, like that.
Yeah, which if you do long enough, people will turn off the podcast.
He hurries up and turns me off. Anyways, so Victor is turning 29 years old April 20th. So that will be when this podcast is out. And how does it feel to be almost 29?
Almost 29. I mean, it won't feel much different until I turn 30.
Yeah, that's a big one.
But just right now... I guess I don't feel like I'm 29, right?
I know it freaks me out to think, like, I'm figuring out our ages, and when I'm buying, like, balloons, I'm like, wait, am I buying 28 balloons?
Yeah, sometimes balloons? People ask me my age, and I'll be like, I'm 28? I'm 28, mm-hmm. You know? And I don't know, for me, I think back to, like, high school, mm-hmm. and, like, I was driving, you know, at work, you know, we were patrolling around random areas, and we drove by a high school, and I was like, oh, let me pull into this high school. You know, it's empty now, mm-hmm. given the circumstances. But I drove around, I looked, and I was like, man, what no worries we had back in high school. You know, like, you go through high school, and every little problem that you have, mm-hmm. you think it's the end of the world. Mm-hmm. You honestly, oh, my God, this girl doesn't like me, or I'm going to fail this test. It's going to be so bad, and I'm ruined. And then later, you realize that,
I was so chill. It was so chill, though.
It's not a big deal.
Right.
Nothing. You're spending somebody else's money, mm-hmm. right? And all you got to do is get good grades.
Yeah.
I mean, and even if you don't get the best grades, you mm-hmm. can still go to college, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But anyway, that's a long-winded way to say it's like I don't feel as old as I am.
What do you hope to get accomplished by 30?
By 30? I definitely want to have kids. Definitely want to have
plural,
kids by 30.
So, do you realize it takes... Nine months. So we can maybe have one kid by then.
No, we could have two.
No.
So it's impossible to have twins?
No, it's not. Gotcha. You got me.
No,
but I hope we have twins.
I mean, at least, you know, I'd hope to have a kid. I hope, you know, we're married and I just want to keep doing the job that I'm doing, you know, because I enjoy it. But I don't know. I also think that I want to continue to stay in shape. That's a big thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to be, you know how people have that dad where it's like, wow, I can never beat my dad in anything until he like starts getting really old.
That's what you want.
That's what I want to be.
My dad is that dad.
Yeah. I want to be like 40 years old and still like kicking ass. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. so I don't know that.
I get it.
That's something too. But
so staying in shape is important to you.
I mean, it's longevity too, right? Because I want to be able to play with our grandkids. I don't want to be like that grandpa that can't even play with
You know. But sometimes it's not a choice. Sometimes
I know, but if it's up to me and if it's my choice and I'm mm-hmm. if no other circumstances in my life cause it to be something else that I can't, if it's just me exercising and staying healthy, then I want to keep that control.
You know
what I mean?
Well, that's good.
So.
Well, today's guest is absolutely magnificent.
Oh, yes.
I
fell in love with him.
Yeah, me too. He is just a breath of fresh air. He's I mean, on Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, he's kind of a big deal, yeah. But he's very humble and down to earth. And
I feel like friends with him now.
I can confidently say he's my friend.
So enjoy this podcast with Jake Borelli.
Hello.
Hello, hey. Hello, hello.
Hey, sorry. I think you just saw. I couldn't figure out how to work FaceTime, but we figured it out.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, is he dodging us? Because I was about to be felt stood up.
Yeah, I called and then I realized you could see my face, which is not a good face to see right now. It's very bearded and all this stuff. So then I immediately hung up and Googled how to just FaceTime audio. And that's when you go.
Well, that's the funny thing. Me and Nicole, when people ask us to do like, oh, you should do your podcast on like, or post it on YouTube or do it like a live thing. And we're like, oh, well, I'm in like shorts and I don't even have underwear on right now.
The fun of it is like not having to get ready. So
I know. I've been wearing the same sweatpants for like 3 days. So I'm in the same.
Same here.
That sounds like, well, that's life right now, right? Quarantine life.
That's pretty much life. Yeah.
All right. So we have Jake Borelli on right now. Borelli. Am I pronouncing it right?
Yeah. Jake Borelli.
Is that Italian based?
Yeah. My dad's side of the family is all Italian from New York. So
From New York and then from like maybe like Sicily or something or like mainland.
That's what they like to say. I don't know if we're actually from Sicily.
Okay. So I like when I talk to our guests, I like to know where they came from. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't like just jumping into everything that everybody knows now because, you know, that's fun and exciting and people like to know that. But I like to dig a little deeper. Okay.
Awesome. Let's go.
So you are from the Midwest originally, correct?
Yeah. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio for basically my whole childhood. I didn't leave till I was 18.
Oh, wow. And so what was it like growing up? Because I am a transplant now into the Midwest. I moved from Louisiana over here to Michigan and going 3 years now. So what's it like growing up in the Midwest?
I mean, it was wonderful. It was kind of like your classic sort of suburban childhood. You know, I grew up in a pretty safe suburb right outside of Columbus. And so we would, you know, hang out with our friends during the summers and walk to each other's houses and play outside and all that sort of crazy stuff you see in these, like in movies, kind of. It was like, it was a very just sort of like safe, nice childhood. Yeah. I grew up with two brothers and we had a couple best friends who lived on our block and we would play out in like the church lot is what we called it. It was basically like the field behind one of the churches right on our road. And that was like our world as children.
Yeah. How in being in Ohio, nobody really thinks that as being like a place to begin an acting career. I mean, I guess that passion, right? And you did end up moving to LA, but how was that in your mind growing up, like wanting to be an actor and living in the Midwest?
I loved TV as a kid. I would watch TV all the time to the point where my parents were a little concerned as to how much TV I was watching. And then like, as I would get older, I would stay up to like 4 o'clock in the morning and binge watch TV shows on Nick at Night, like old sitcoms and things. And so I just loved it. And, the story that my mom always likes telling is that apparently when I was super young, my favorite show was Barney. Mm. And she said, like, apparently even before I could really form like full sentences, I kept pointing at the TV and being like, I want to go there. And she was like, oh, okay, you want to go watch Barney in the audience? You want to go watch Barney? And I was like, no, on stage. And so it was very clear to her that I wanted to be a performer of some type. And so the minute I turned 9, I think it was, that was how old you had to be to do community theater in Columbus. And so I started doing theater immediately, right when I hit the age that you could.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the beauty of growing up in a big city in Ohio, because Columbus is pretty huge. It's the capital, and there's a huge art scene there. It's a really great... it's just like a great sort of liberal art city, basically. And, it was a sort of the perfect place to, learn theater and learn about the arts.
So as you were learning about theater and the arts, I understand that you're very avid about art itself, right? Not the art of just acting, but the artistic art of like drawing, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm huge into visual art.
And so how did you decide? Cause you even contemplating going to art school, correct?
Yeah, it was a huge decision. That was probably my biggest decision, as a teenager, because at that point I basically started painting seriously in high school, you know, once the classes started getting a little more intense. Mm-hmm. And, we were an IB school. Do you guys know what IB is? The International Baccalaureate. It's like,
oh man, that sounds so prestigious.
When I say those words, it does sound a little hoity-toity. It was basically, so you have AP classes, right? Which are like the college prep classes.
Yep.
And then IB classes are the same thing, but it's a curriculum that is worldwide. So it's like taken on international schools too. So like if you wanted to go to school in like Europe or something, these classes would transfer.
Wow.
And so, but they had a thing called the IB program, which was basically like, if you took every single class IB, you got like this IB diploma, which was prestigious, I guess, when applying for colleges. So I was like a huge nerd. I loved school so much. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to do the IB program. So I did like every single class, International Baccalaureate, including the art classes, which were very intense.
Yeah, and be swamped in work. I mean, I can't imagine like just the amount of work that would take in for a kid
insane.
That young.
I'm very type A. I really like work and like I'm a bit of a teacher's pet. So it was kind of perfect for me. But that's when I really fell in love with art, because we were forced to do so much of it. And a lot of it was like research-based art and figuring out process and really learning technique and stuff. And so it was pretty much like a college program art class, but in my high school, which was a great opportunity.
Yeah.
And I was just obsessed with painting, and I was on the track to going and being a fine art major in college. But then I also had this love of theater and acting. And once high school started, I think I had done like 17 plays or something.
Oh, wow.
At downtown at Columbus Children's Theater. And I had started, through people that I met at the theater, I had started with an agent, a regional agent in Columbus, Ohio, and mm-hmm. was doing commercial work and radio work and sort of making money doing that. And sort of getting bit by the bug of this artistic passion maybe turning into a career.
Yeah.
So then, you know, senior year happens and you have to decide what college you're going to, if that's what you want to do. And because I grew up at this IB school, we were forced to apply to colleges.
Oh,
And at that point, I was going back and forth in my head about whether I even wanted to go to college. And it was a huge decision, but I ended up saying, you know what? Screw it. I want to be an actor. I want to move to LA. I want to drop college, which was like unheard of at my school. I think 3 kids from my school didn't go to college.
Oh, and
I
was one of them. You're the odd man out. Yeah.
Right. And it was kind of nuts too, because I loved school so much and I loved going to school and learning and all this stuff. And so it was a little bit out of left field for some people when they heard I wasn't going to college.
And how'd your parents take that? Were they a little apprehensive about that, or were they just like all, you know, trying to keep a good face for you, you know? Or
they were for sure apprehensive, because I think that they knew the benefit of going to college, but I think that they saw that I was, I wasn't taking the decision lightly, and I had a plan. And at that point, I had flown to LA and met with managers and really sort of took it into my own hands and wasn't doing it willy-nilly, you know? And
yeah.
I think that they, at a certain point, I was 18 and they didn't really have a say.
Yeah.
I mean, they had an opinion, but I think that they trusted my opinion as well, which thank God they did, because it was a huge, huge thing for them to let me move all the way across the country.
And it's funny you say that, because so I work in as a police officer here, state trooper in Michigan, and 17 and 18 is a weird age for us, right? Because for parents, you cannot kick your child out of the house at 17, right? You can't just neglect your child and say, mm-hmm. you got to leave my house. But at 17, they're allowed to leave the house and you're not allowed to stop them. Right.
Right. It's a bit of a catch 22. Yeah,
exactly. And then at 18, then you can be like, all right, get the heck out of my house. Right.
Yeah. It was a weird age, but they trusted me. And I think, you know, that I had sort of proven my dedication and proven my desire. And I also think, even looking back, there's a huge part of me that doesn't truly believe that college is the best route for everybody.
I have the same sentiments. Yep.
Yeah. And I'm so glad I didn't go to school. I think it would have actually sort of halted my development in a weird way.
So when Nicole and I first started our Coco Caliente merchandise, it was hard, right? You think you're going to sell this stuff online, it's going to be easy, but you get a lot of orders. Getting them out fast is tough. You know, you got to keep track of who gets what shipping carrier you should use. Are you getting the best rates? And that's why we use ShipStation. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. Just a few clicks and you'll be managing your orders, printing out labels, and getting your products to happy customers. ShipStation makes it easy. It helps online sellers of any size get orders out quickly, and you save money on shipping costs. And no matter what you're selling, it can be on Amazon, Etsy, or your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. And right now, Coco Caliente listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use offer code COCO. Make sure your business is ready to meet the demands of delivery culture. Get started at ShipStation.com today. Click on the microphone on the top of the homepage and type in COCO. That's ShipStation.com, then enter the offer code COCO. ShipStation, make ship happen. So let's say you were going to do the art track, and I'm just trying to picture in my mind, what would that look like in terms of a career, like a sustainable career for an artist? Not like, you know, the Van Goghs of the world where, you know, years after passing, you know, you become famous or whatever. So is it being an art director, or is it being like an artist and just having your studio and then doing stuff on the side? Like what would that have looked like?
I would have loved to have just been a fine art painter, but once again, that would have been another career path, as you're saying, that was sort of up in the air. And so one of the huge things that I wanted to do was work in an art department at Pixar, the art department at Pixar, basically, because I was obsessed with Pixar movies. I loved sort of this like realism, but within cartoon characters. And that's sort of what my focus was during the classes I was taking at school. And so that would have been a sort of like a dream path for me.
Yeah.
But that's what factored into the decision too. It was like both of these things that I really wanted to do both seemed a little bit...
impossible almost.
Yeah, and a little bit based in dreams and a little bit like, well, if both of these paths are uncertain, I might as well do the one that I want a little bit more, which is acting. And I also might as well do the one that's not going to put me, you know, $100,000, $200,000
in debt too. I totally agree.
So
when you are doing these plays, like in high school, were you just like stand out, like getting the best role, or is it called lead role? Right. So like getting the lead role, just doing, or are you just like, oh my gosh, he's so good, he needs to like pursue this? Or like
Or she wants to know if you were really bad.
No, and not really bad. But just
if you're the worst one there. And
to be honest, I was pretty good. I would. So this was the theater downtown. So it was a more of a professional theater.
Oh,
the high school.
Okay.
And I tended to sort of be in the bigger roles, the more meatier roles, and then there was also a thing called. Suicide casting or suiciding for a role, which if you grew up in the theater, you'd get excited about that.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what that is. Explain it to Nicole so she understands.
so it's basically you audition and you say, I'm only auditioning for this role. And a lot of these like community theaters, you will audition and they will place you in the role, like kind of like what you would do in high school. But because I was so busy and doing a lot of regular school, I was like, I don't, it's such a time commitment. We were doing, you know, at age like 10 to 15, we were doing 8 shows a week.
Oh my god!
While doing school, we were doing 3 shows on Saturday sometimes. Like it was a grueling schedule. And so I was like, if I'm going to commit to this, I want the meaty role. And so I would suicide for the roles all the time.
Oh, the marvelous Jake.
Yeah. So that's awesome. It was in that group that I, you know, learned a lot and created some contacts that actually helped me when I started doing
work. So your parents knew that you were really good then. So like moving to LA, it's like, okay, this kid's, he's got a good shot at, you know, making his dreams come true.
Yeah. And I was working with a lot of really talented people too. Like the theater that I grew up with, some of the alumni are like Josh Radner, who's the main guy in How I Met Your Mother. Mm-hmm. You know, he was one group ahead of me in that program.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then Mike Feist, who's one of the lead characters in Dear Evan Hansen, the Broadway show. He played Connor Murphy, who the whole show sort of like circles around.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
He was in my program. We did so many plays together.
Wow.
And so it was like, it was a really good group of people to learn with.
Cool.
So, that's crazy. And it gave you the confidence to even want to do that. Right. Cause you know, you were doing well. Before we leave Ohio, right. Before we leave Ohio, I'm going to ask you some trivia questions.
Oh
see if you
gosh.
Know. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Ohio gets his name from.
Oh, is it an Indian tribe?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
Iroquois, the Iroquois word for Ohio, meaning great river.
Okay.
And then very, very random fact, the actual cash register was invented in Ohio by James Ritty in 1878.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
So one trivia question.
One trivia question, another fun fact.
He got it.
So at 18, you make that move to L.A. What is that like? Like, what's going through your head? Because it has to be a whirlwind experience, especially, I mean, I imagine you going to the Hollywood sign and being like, oh, my God, I'm here, right? Like, this is, I'm here, and I just got to make it here, you know?
I mean, it was, you guys, looking back, it was insane. I don't know what I was thinking. And, like, I know I just applauded my parents for letting me move out there alone. But, like, what were they thinking?
It
was insane. Most kids, they go to college and they're, like, in their dorm and they have, like, a card that pays for their meals and stuff. Like,
right.
I was learning how to pay bills by myself and pay rent and you know, I like going to the DMV, like what is that as an 18-year-old? It was like crazy. And my senior year, basically my mom and I went out a couple times to, you know, meet with managers and start auditioning a little bit. And I remember her and I, we were like driving around aimlessly trying to figure out what to do. We ended up driving up to the Fox lot, which is like this massive studio on the west side, because we just wanted to see it. We drove up to the main gate and they're like, hello, what's your name? Can we have your ID? And we were like, yeah, we're just here to like go in and see. Like, you can't do that. Like, what? So we were like so oblivious. We walked around Hollywood and Highland, where the you know, all the handprints are, and
yep,
the stars
yep, yep.
along the
Chinese
road,
theater
like,
and all that.
Yeah, like the tourist central, right? And we were like, oh my god, this is Hollywood. Let's go there. And we walked up to the information booth where this, like, looking back, he was probably like 17 years old, the kid working the info booth. And we went up very earnestly and we're like, hello, where do aspiring actors live? Where should I get an apartment? And this kid looked at us like we were like, what? Like we were idiots. And looking back, I'm like, what were we doing? We had no idea.
It's funny because I lived briefly in California in Claremont, and then I remember like being excited to go down to that area, that specific area you're talking about, and like parking in the parking garage like just across the street, and then being like, all right, this is not where people hang out. You know, this is just a straight up tourist area. It smells funny. You got people in outfits, you know, trying to get money for pictures. Just like, I don't know.
I've been there in 10 years.
That's awesome. And it's funny you do say that because same thing. I was 18 and I moved to Puerto Rico to go to college by myself. And doing those things by yourself, I mean, that's the epitome of growing up, right? And going through those struggles and new things and everything by yourself is kind of like, I mean, I feel like a lot of people need to experience that, but it's really, I mean, it's not viable for everybody
now
to do it.
Now you're very independent.
Yes. You grew up really fast, didn't you?
Looking back, I did. And who knows what that caused in me. I still talk about it in therapy. I'm like, was this a good idea? But I think it was. Mm-hmm.
And so shortly after you get there, how long until you land your role as Roy in iCarly?
Well, so that's what's crazy. It was my first audition.
Get out of here.
Oh my God.
I had gone on a couple auditions while I was still living in Ohio, because I had a manager at that point. So I was sending a couple auditions, and I had flown out once or twice, like for Desperate Housewives was like massive. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going to fly out. Because my dad also, side note, my dad worked for United Airlines. So I flew for free. I was not like,
that's nice.
I wasn't like, you know, big money spending to do this, but I had this wonderful perk because my dad worked in baggage claim for United. And so I did that. But once I moved, my first audition was for iCarly, and I happened to book it, and it was, I was ecstatic because I was obsessed with Nickelodeon as a kid. And, it was amazing. And that summer I booked two or three jobs, and it sort of surprised me because I think it warped my idea of what the business was. I think I thought partially that, oh, this is a little bit easier than I thought. Everyone said this was going to be the hardest thing in the entire world. Mm-hmm. And hit the ground running, which was amazing. And I think it gave me something super valuable, which was the knowledge that like, this is possible. I can book things, that it's just a matter of when at this point. But then I hit a weird, like 2-3 year patch where I didn't book anything.
Oh.
And that's when, you know, the real struggle started. So it wasn't necessarily super difficult the first few months, but then it became a little bit harder.
And so what was going through your mind in those, because so situations like that really allow somebody to grow, right?
Mm-hmm.
You find your strengths in the darkest times. And I remember myself like just graduating college and then getting this job at Enterprise, and then sometimes being like, dude, I don't know if I can afford, you know, the next couple weeks here if my paycheck doesn't come on time, or if it's on a weekend and mm-hmm. my paycheck doesn't come till Monday, like I'm stuck eating ramen, right, until that check comes in. Like what was that experience like for you?
No, I mean, it's awful. It's awful not knowing when you're going to work again or when you're going to get paid. And a lot of what actors live off of are residuals too. Mm-hmm. So we get like small checks for like, you know, digital sales and mm-hmm. international sales through our union. And it's like, we never know when they're going to come. It's kind of like you go and you look in your mailbox and it's like you're playing, you know, whammy, whammy, stop on like, you know what I mean? You're like, oh God, please see a check. Please see a check. And so like, as a kid too, like making money that way and trying to know if you're going to be able to buy groceries or be able to pay rent when you're living with five other people in a 3-bedroom apartment, it's like, it's very stressful. And knowing that you have yourself to rely on, and that's it. And, it was very difficult. And I think it put a lot more stress on the career than maybe some other people who are a little bit more well off had. And I think it made sort of every audition sort of like a live or die situation. And, it wasn't super, you know, bright and cheery all the time.
No, absolutely. And when they depict situations like that in movies, it's like a moment of perseverance and make it like really glorified, but it sucks when you're in it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I would spend my last money on class, like acting class, to get better. And, you know, studying at weird times because I was also, you know, working odd day jobs and stuff and, mm-hmm. you know, going into the studio with kids at like 6 a.m. to practice a play for that night's class. And like, it was very, you know, grassroots and, kind of awesome too, in a way though.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. reflecting on the, like, life is good now, right? Me and Nicole, you know, we have our house and everything. Like you, everything's great, right? Things are good in life. But looking back at those times, it's now nice to look back, right? Be like, wow, you know, I made it through that. And it's a good experience.
Yeah, it's a bit nostalgic.
Yeah.
And also a lot of those friends that I met in those times when we were all like hunkering down and studying together and reading plays and cooking for each other, like those are still my friends now.
Absolutely.
And it's sort of my tribe. And we all hang out. We all now work together. Like one of my best friends is Janine Mason. She, you know, we would produce plays together and study together all the time. And she happened to end up on Grey's Anatomy with me as one of the other interns.
That's awesome.
We worked together for a year and she now has her own TV show. And like, everyone's sort of coming up together. It makes a career that is seemingly an individual career about you and your trajectory through it. It makes it seem more like a group effort and like we're all doing it together, which is nice.
Did you ever think about quitting in those 2 years, on the back end of those 2 years?
Yeah. I mean, all the time. But that's the other thing. It's like you put so much energy into this thing and mm-hmm. it almost makes it hard to quit, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that was also sort of what I was explaining before. That was this special thing about that first year, that first summer where I did book quite a bit. It was,
yeah.
It was like, there was always the knowledge in the back of my mind that I am good enough. I will book again. It's just a matter of when, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's
yep.
a bit of like a, it's like a gambling thing, it's like a bit of like yeah. a gambling addiction. It's like, well, just now I just need more auditions. Just give me a couple more quarters.
Yeah, I was going to say one more quarter. Know? Just sit here. So, you know, because
yeah.
and like you said, I can only imagine like the amount, the, you know, the thousands or millions of people that go to LA and then don't book a job at all for 2 years. You know what I mean? And they quit.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I mean, even more, some people I know have been out here for 8 years, 10 years and
man.
Aren't, but, and I'm, it's like everyone has a completely different path, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
So then you land Grey's Anatomy, right? You,
mm-hmm.
At some point you land Grey's Anatomy and that was only supposed to be for 2 episodes. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a possible 2 episodes, maybe just 1 episode.
Oh.
co-star is even, you know, less of a certain type of role. It's a bit of a smaller role.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so you went to that and then that turned into something that you weren't expecting. And so like what
you obviously nailed it.
Yeah. You obviously did a good job, right? You obviously, I don't want to boost your ego. You did all right. Okay. so like, how is that feeling? Like, okay, wait, they're going to call me back. Like, we're going to keep doing this. Like, what is that process like,
and then
logistically,
yeah, yeah.
right? Like, are they like, all right, look, we want you for more episodes and then it can turn
yeah.
into something.
So
like,
it started out even weirder. I was at a point, I had been in LA for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
And I was on a Nickelodeon show, like on and off basically for a couple years and having a blast, but other, you know, I was still working a day job and I was still, you know, fighting to pay rent and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it was just, I felt like I had given so much to the industry side of things that I had lost a little bit of the craft and a little bit of my love for why I loved it in the
mm-hmm.
first place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made a crazy decision after auditioning for the Harry Potter play in New York. I auditioned a bunch for that. And
oh.
I realized, you know what? I want to do theater. I want to study harder. I want to meet with some coaches out in New York that I love. And so I moved to New York after 8 years in LA.
Oh, my God.
I know that.
Sold, and like fully moved, guys. I sold my car. quit my job, changed my health insurance over. I was under Obamacare. I like switched it over to the New York Obamacare.
Let's just say that the health insurance, switching your health insurance is a big deal.
It's huge.
Big deal. It took a long time. Yes. And I fully moved. I was like making friends. Like I was living with six people in an apartment in Brooklyn, like studying theater with an amazing coach out there. And I was there for 6 weeks and sent one audition tape, and that was for Grey's Anatomy. It was from my agent back in LA who was like trying to pull me back to LA. I sent in one audition tape, but it was, I remember I got it super late at night. I didn't know that many people in New York. Grey's Anatomy was always sort of known as this show that was like impossible to audition for and like really hard to book because it was like this, you know, super amazing thing. Right?
Yeah, it's a machine of a show for sure.
Right. And so I was like, there's no way I'm going to get this. Like I was in my mind, I was thinking like McDreamy, McSchemy. And I was like, I don't even know that I'm going to be able to put this on tape. And so I called my one friend that I knew might be able to help me. And I was like, if she answers, I'll put it on tape. If not, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it.
Oh, wow.
And luckily she answered and we put it on tape, sent it away. And then I just forgot about it because I was like, that's Grey's Anatomy. It's never going to happen. And 2 weeks later, they called me and were like, you booked the role. Can you be here in LA at 10 a.m. tomorrow?
So I
flew the night flight. That was, I found out at 9:30 p.m. New York time. I packed up all my stuff, flew out to LA the next day for my two episodes, shot my two episodes, and then went back to New York. And I was like, what a wonderful whirlwind experience. That was insane. Oh my God. And then they asked me back for another episode. And I was like, what?
Oh.
Holy mackerel. Because I had this cool storyline where like I, you know, dropped my glasses in a patient's body.
Yeah.
And I ended up sleeping with one of the hot female doctors, Joe Wilson. And it was like this awkward, like weird thing. And so I was like, oh, maybe I'll come back as a patient. That's great. Like, how fun. I'll come back and like wreak havoc again on the hospital. And then as I was packing to come back for another week to do another episode, I got a call from my rep saying, hey, you're not pinned for one more episode anymore. I was like, ah, bummer. And they were like, no, you're pinned for eight.
So
plan to be here for 2 months. And I was like, what? And so I like told all my roommates and my sublet, I was like, guys, I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back. And I moved that night back to LA. And
wow.
Yeah, the eight episodes ended up turning into 20, which ended up turning into a series regular. It was insane.
That is, and wow, I just can't imagine like getting that call.
I have goosebumps just hearing it. Like,
in completely different levels of things, like Nicole and I, reality TV, and getting the call to be on the show is like, oh my gosh. But I just can't imagine like Grey's Anatomy called me.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
And they want eight more episodes. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I was freaking out because at that point, one episode of that show was life-changing to me. Like, I even remember walking out to my new roommates in New York and them being like, what? What was that? And I was like, guys, I think I'm going to be on Grey's Anatomy. They all, like, lost it. Like,
yeah.
We celebrated so hard. Like, it was, it was life-changing even just to be on that show. And then sort of just like a weird dream state to have it turn into this amazing, beautiful thing that it's turned into.
Wow. I just, that's incredible. And while on the show, you actually came out on the show and in real life at the same time, correct?
Yeah. So after a year of being on the show, my character, I basically got a pitch from our showrunner that the character would come out of the closet. So it was sort of this, you know, whirlwind, another big whirlwind thing for me because
absolutely.
I knew that my character coming out on this amazing, prolific, iconic show would be a huge deal for me as someone who loved the show and watched the show and always wanted to see myself reflected back, but never quite did. And I knew how big it would be for people. And so I knew people were going to talk about it and be excited by it. And I knew I would want to join that conversation with them, but I wouldn't be able to if I wasn't out myself. And
absolutely.
So I was like, oof, if my character comes out, that means I'm coming out. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be massive for me, because at that point, you know, I had been a working actor for 8-9 years mm-hmm. and was out to everyone in my personal life, but hadn't made like a public statement about it.
Okay.
And
okay.
So it was, yeah, I knew it was going to be a sort of like a big shift in my life.
Yeah,
to
absolutely.
Say the, to say the least.
No, I can only imagine. And at least, but you didn't, like, your parents knew, and everybody in your like inner circle of life and your personal life, they knew already, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I came out to my parents when I was 18. It was actually flashback to me moving to LA, right? How sort of crazy everything was. And at that point I was still in the closet. I was out to my one best friend in high school who I came out senior year to. And she was going to keep my secret for me, because mm-hmm. I had these ideas that if I was going to be a professional actor, I couldn't come out of the closet, because a lot of things I heard growing up, especially in Ohio, in a religious environment.
Yeah,
and,
conservative Midwest. Yeah.
Yeah. And in a time when, you know, we had people coming out in the media that would then, you know, their careers just sort of ended.
Yeah,
or
get
they
ostracized.
Got a lot of backlash
yep.
for it. I was hearing a lot of these things, and I had made a decision very young, around 8th or 9th grade, when I knew that I was gay. I made the decision not to tell anybody. And so when I moved out to LA alone, I was very much in the closet and wasn't coming out to anyone out here, any of these new people that I was meeting. Mm-hmm. And in that summer where everything was going great, I was like, oh, this is easy. I'm sort of doing this. I'm living on my own. I'm having a great time. I'm working. I'm learning so much. I'm meeting so many new people. I sort of didn't realize how traumatic it was to be alone and in the closet in a new, scary, big city with
Absolutely.
All of this pressure.
Yep.
And I woke up in the middle of the night one night with a panic attack. And I was sort of like these awful things in my mind going like, oh my gosh, my parents are back in Ohio. They're dying. What's going on? You know, like making up all this crazy stuff in my head, as you do when you're having a panic attack.
Yeah.
And so I immediately flew home and came out to my parents, and then came out to my brothers, and came out to, you know, a lot of people in my life that summer, because I didn't, it all caught up to me how awful it was for a young person to be in the closet for that long.
Yeah. You know? I've seen it before in like different documentaries or talking to different people. Like we had Shane McAnally on, he had, you know, was talking about that as well. Mm-hmm. And I just can't imagine. And he was even talking about how you doing your craft a certain way is not exactly who you are. You know what I mean? So you might have gotten better at your craft even after you came out to everybody, especially your family, because you felt more comfortable in your own skin. Mm-hmm. You know?
And yeah, totally.
And so
totally. Well, and I think that there's a sense of when you're doing art, art is so much better when there's an intention behind it, and when there is a goal that you're aiming at through that art, right? Like
absolutely.
When there's a message, or when there's a thing that you're trying to solve, or something that you're trying to give to somebody.
And vulnerability itself, mm-hmm. you know, all that ties
yes,
together.
It all sort of like glitters up, you know? And so I think, especially after coming out so publicly and coming out with this character, I think things changed for me where I finally was able to put my shoulder fully behind my intention, which
yep.
was to show people that we're all in this together, that nothing you do is going to be weird and awful, and mm-hmm. that there's, you know, humanity and vulnerability and love in anything. And I think it took me coming out in my personal life and publicly to sort of fully get behind that intention, mm-hmm. you know?
That's awesome. Well, I'm happy you were able to do that. And if anybody's listening, or, you know, everybody that listens to this, that should give you, you know, a little bit more comfort if you find yourself in that situation. Because honestly, everybody should be able to be themselves without, you know, having fear of anything, you know, mm-hmm. so there's that.
Yeah, totally.
So I wanted to ask you, because Nicole and I happen to have done some reality TV. No big deal, right?
It's not a big deal.
It's literally not a big deal.
It's actually kind of a huge deal. Yeah. I've been waiting to talk about it.
So this is my transition into what reality TV do you like? Because I am under the understanding that you enjoy reality TV.
I do. And here's the thing. I'm going to preface this with, I am a crazy person when it comes to spoilers. So I'm going to say this in a very, I'm scared, because when I say how obsessed I am with Survivor, that is such an understatement. But the thing is, I'm not caught up yet. So I know you guys being realm might know a little bit more than I do, but I'm catching up fast. I was obsessed with Survivor as a kid.
Yeah, Survivor is good. Yeah.
Yes, I fell off the bandwagon a little bit, you know, as life happened to me. And this past July, a year or two ago, I ended up playing a game of Survivor in the Griffith Park here in LA with like 20 strangers.
Oh my God.
It lasted like 24 hours, and we didn't eat all day, and like had challenges and voted people off. It was like a backyard Survivor game.
You're a fan.
I was obsessed, right? And I played with a girl. One of the girls that I met in that game had played Survivor. She was in the season 30, the white collar, blue collar, no collar.
Okay.
And so after playing with her, we made it to the final two, her and I. And
oh my gosh.
But I think she only won because the people voting on the jury were fans of Survivor. Yeah. So I was like, oh, this is a pity vote. I would have won that thing. But I got second place.
That's awesome. But,
right? So I was like, oh, I was burned by the fact that she beat me. So I was like, now I got to watch this girl's season. So last July, I started watching from her season and became obsessed. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and watch from season one. So since July, I've been binging the entire series. And I'm now on season 32. And I've like literally watched like 300, or I don't know how many episodes that is, right? 30 times 12, over 300, like 350 episodes of Survivor since July. I'm like obsessed. And I've been trying to catch up to watch the current season because I know how special it is, but I'm not there yet. So we'll see. I'd like anytime. And now it's like very known in my friend group that I'm obsessed with Survivor. So all my friends are coming out of the woodwork as Survivor fans because they're watching season 40 right now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, do not tell. Anytime someone texts me about Survivor, I'm like, stop. I'm not reading your text.
But I'm obsessed. That's awesome, because you know the reality TV fans for those shows are that you guys get really invested in it. No, we get really invested in watching these shows and being a part of it and talking to the group. And it's almost like a guilty pleasure. Because like you said, nobody will say anything about it until one person says something about it. And it's like, oh, you watched
that?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Like, I didn't realize there's all these people that still watch Survivor. Like, I just did a film, and me, the guy who played my love interest, and the girl who played my best friend were all obsessed with Survivor. And we didn't find out until, like, the last week of filming. And we were like, we missed so much time to talk about Survivor. Like, what's happening?
That's hilarious.
I'm obsessed with Survivor. You know, Survivor, I feel like they've had a lot of people on there from like Big Brother and Amazing Race and things like that. So there's like, I have like introductions into other shows via Survivor, but I'm obsessed with that. I'm also super obsessed with Project Runway. I've seen every single episode. I love Heidi Klum. I think it's awesome. And so cool that they're like, the contestants, they're artists, you know what I mean? They like make things and you get to see it from beginning to end. And so I love competition shows like that, like Great British Bake Off, and I'm currently obsessed with American Idol. But,
oh yeah, me too. You know. Yes. I cry though so much watching it. I'm like, oh my god, I gotta stop
it's
crying.
So sad.
Let me say, I can't. okay, this is, it's a great season. Don't get me wrong.
It is.
But everybody has such a sad story.
I know.
You know, like,
I know.
And, like, and it's so sad because I refer to people from Nicole. Is that the one that, that's a single mom. Like,
yeah. And that's the one that, like, lost their friend or lost their dad. I'm like, oh my God, this is so
Is this
sad.
The homeless one? You know
oh
what I mean?
It's my like, God.
Yeah. Yeah. She's great too, by the way.
Yeah.
But, oh my yeah, God.
It is. They all have these, like, mm-hmm. amazing stories, which I guess is, you know, it's part of the structure of the show. It's sort of right. like what gets people to vote for them, right? It's like everyone has these awesome
yeah,
stories.
I'll see someone really good and I'll be like, well, we haven't seen them before. I was like, well, maybe they don't have a sad story to share. Like, honestly, though, it sounds so bad. But
it's like, yeah, I was born in an upper middle class family, had a great yeah. childhood, like, family's
like,
great.
I'm like, wait, why are we
yeah,
just
like,
seeing
you're
this?
Voted off.
So quarantine life has to be going pretty okay for you then, saying that you like to, you know, binge some reality TV. You like to paint. Have you been painting?
I haven't been painting just because no. it's a bit of a production. You have okay. to, like, you know, you get all your stuff out. But I've been knitting and
oh,
I've
okay.
been doing some embroidery
oh,
and
wow.
puzzle making. So it's like, you know,
okay.
I've been,
so lots
you
of
know,
stuff.
Fucks in my artistic muscle. But mm-hmm. yeah, painting's a... My apartment's a mess. I wish you guys could see it right now. It's like a disaster zone in here.
As you were talking about Project Runway, I had a guilty pleasure of a show, and it was America's Next Top Model.
Oh, I watched that
oh,
too.
Yeah.
ANTM. I used to watch that as a, like, growing up
me
so
too.
Much.
Yeah.
My family hated me for it, I'm sure.
And like, especially yeah. when they did the season of Just Guys one time, and I was like, oh, this is great. And they,
yeah,
you, like,
it's like insane.
And so I don't know, that it's just a weird show, especially for like, you know, a guy to be like, oh my God, I love America's Next Top Model. But mm-hmm. yeah, I think it was
but
awesome.
If you think about it, if it kind of makes sense, you just look at pretty girls all yeah. day. Like, it kind of makes sense. It's sure. a little bit like my dad is obsessed with the Bachelor. And I'm like, oh, well, that kind of makes sense because it's like pretty girls all fighting over a you know what I mean? Like, that makes sense. So,
did you watch The Bachelor or do you watch The Bachelor?
I've seen a couple seasons of it, but I didn't watch this last one, but I'm very intrigued by the idea. I think it's really interesting, and a bunch of my friends watch it.
Well, because I never watch it.
This
Nicole
was our
kinda,
first season that we watched because we wanted to understand
to
like the hype, and
oh,
it was
yeah.
like pretty terrible, like terrible, and like you feel so. It was a train wreck of a season, I'll just say that.
It's very intense. Like, you yeah. put all these people who want love in this pressure
yeah.
cooker. And
there's only one guy and all these girls.
I know.
I'm just like...
Okay, but let's also preface it with the fact that love is in quotation marks and Instagram is the goal. Is that... Or
That's what Victor thinks. Victor is just so convinced that...
That's a very pessimistic look. I'm joking. You're right. You're
know,
definitely right.
Okay, look, I know people think that it's like, no, they're looking for... Okay, I get it. But are they? But, you know, like, is that... And then, like, every time Peter, you know, the guy is like, oh, you know, I'm really starting to fall in love with you. And then he says that to, like, seven people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then at the end, nobody gets married and nobody's together. Like, come on. I don't know.
I feel it. Well, see, that's why I like Survivor. I feel like Survivor is a little more realistic.
It's real
and
people,
like,
yes.
And it's less like, in a way, it's less dramatic. I mean, I know it gets pretty dramatic, but like, it's dramatic because these people are stuck on an island together mm-hmm. fighting for their lives
right.
and they're hungry and have headaches. And you know what I mean? Like, it makes sense.
Would you ever, if you were given the opportunity to actually do Survivor, is that something that you would do? Or it's just like, I know that actors don't do reality TV, but you're such a big fan. So would you take that opportunity?
I would love to do Survivor. So spread the word to whoever you know. Because
CBS.
I would go in a heartbeat. I'm obsessed. Okay. I think I would be really good. I'm like, I'm outdoorsy. I love camping and like... being outside and getting mm-hmm. like digging around in the dirt and stuff. And I also just think I would be a good like strategic player. Maybe I shouldn't like play my cards right now. Just
right,
in case
you're
I get
smart.
On. I mean,
and
I'm
you
super
can get
sweet
along with
loyal.
People.
I'm super sweet and loyal and not a competition threat. Yeah.
We'll get together with our CBS contacts and see if we can make this happen.
No. I could be like that girl from The Facts of Life. You know what I mean? Like, maybe people wouldn't recognize me in the beginning.
Yes, that would be so cool.
That's so awesome. And I'm so happy you came to talk with us today. Mm-hmm. You're such a great person. Just taking the time to talk to us. Nobody's over here in Michigan.
I'm having a blast. I'm super excited to watch your guys' season. I'm like, I might do Amazing Race after this. How many seasons are there?
We were on 31, and that was the last one that aired.
All right. So if I start in July, by this time next year, I'll get to your season. Yeah, Maybe I'll just jump to your season.
It's hard to binge those shows because there's so many episodes. Like, people are like, I want to watch your Big Brother seasons. And I'm like, it's 40 some episodes a season.
Are you ready
to
make that commitment?
It's an hour an episode. Yeah,
Big Brother is?
It's 40 episodes. 40 some episodes.
Because it's three episodes a week for 3 months.
99 days.
Wow. I had no idea.
But Amazing Race is only once a week, so it's probably only 10 episodes.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can send you the DVD.
Okay, so here's a question, because I'll do this during the quarantine. Should I start with your episode of Big Brother? Your guys' seasons of Big Brother, and then go to Amazing Race? Or should I start with Amazing Race?
Let me give you some context. So Nicole and I, we met on Big Brother. We didn't get engaged or together until after Big Brother. So our relationship developed there.
On Big Brother, we were just friends.
Yeah, we were friends. And then we got together after the show, and then we did Amazing Race together. Mm-hmm. And then after Amazing Race, I proposed to Nicole, but it was before it aired on Big Brother. I don't know if that makes sense.
It aired on season 20 of Big Brother.
Yeah, I proposed her on Big Brother.
It's whether you want to see it. Yeah,
so but the show didn't come out because they didn't put it all together until after I had proposed already.
Right. Wait, so then did you have to keep it a secret because Big Brother was like, we want to have like first look?
No. So the Amazing Race was, I thought Amazing Race was going to be like, hey, look, I don't want you guys to do that because you're not married or engaged rather on Amazing Race, mm-hmm. but nobody said anything. We got engaged. And then if anything, it made it more interesting for people to see, all right, what happened for them to get engaged.
Right. Like, they obviously didn't break up on the show or get in a fight.
It was tough.
This is the good kind of drama. You know what I mean? This is like quality life for him, you know? That's good.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. If we're ever in LA, we have your number.
Oh my god.
No, I'm kidding.
Victor, you're so weird.
No, truly, so guys, wait. I'm actually like into this. Let me know when you're here. Because by that time, I'll probably be done with Survivor. I'll probably have already started binging Big Brother and Amazing Race. And we can like actually get down to the nitty-gritty questions I have.
Heck yes. I like that. I love it. Thank you for talking with us. You're such a pleasure to talk to. This was so much fun. Time just flew by. I didn't even notice it.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, my gosh. We did it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. This was a blast.
All right. Have a good day. Thank you so much.
Bye.
All right. See ya.
What a breath of fresh air. Fun conversation that was with a fellow Midwesterner. Although I'm a transplant, but I am now a
Midwesterner. Do you see why Midwesterners, they're just so nice.
Yeah.
They really are, matter where they go.
Yeah, he's very nice, very humble for being such a successful person. Now, switching gears, Nicole, before I test you with the Spanish word of the day, what do you got for us in store for Weird or Normal?
Well, for Weird or Normal.
Weird.
Or
normal.
So, since it is almost Vic's birthday, you know, cake is something that we will probably have, which, yes, we are having cake, Victor.
Okay. Why are you talking like that?
But it's not. You're having ice cream cake. Vic loves ice cream cake, so my mom's making homemade ice cream cake. So this doesn't apply to ice cream cake.
You know who else likes ice cream cake?
Who likes ice cream cake?
Cake. Michael Scott. The Office. he said that last night in one of the episodes. We rewatch all like The Office all the time. So, but anyway, yes.
Yeah, I was allergic to dairy. That's what he says. Anyways, so this is a Weird or Normal that I saw being done before, and it is a suggestion from a listener. It's actually a really good idea. Do you break apart your cupcake in half and then put the bottom half on top of the frosting so it's kind of like a sandwich?
So, rather, do you take the top off of the...
No, you take the bottom off.
You break it in half and put the bottom on top.
Yeah.
I have never heard that in my life.
And it kind of makes sense because it becomes like a sandwich.
That is
so
weird.
So it's like cake, frosting cake, instead of like all the frosting on top and then all the cake on the bottom.
My only problem with that is...
crumbs.
Yes. Crumbs galore, which cupcakes are normally given at a party. So if somebody's at my house,
Victor,
and they take a cupcake and without a plate, but because cupcakes normally don't come with plates, right? So this is what's processing in my mind. If somebody said that in the house, like, oh, have you guys tried this? I'd be like, no. Because what people do is they just take a cupcake because it already has the bottom part. They pull that, right? So there's a bunch of stuff stuck to the paper already. And then they eat it. And there's enough crumbs as is. You imagine everybody in the house going, oh, yeah, let me
I'm going to teach our kids.
And
this.
Rip it and put it on the crumbs everywhere. It's like if you're going to do that, you got to take a plate.
Okay, Vic.
But also, it's very weird.
It's kind of a good idea. And I've never done it before, but I'm going to try it.
Well, the thing is, I never eat any of that stuff. Half the time. And then the other times that I really do eat them, it's with ice cream. And then
you have a disgusting tendency. Like, let's not even, we've already talked about that. And that's way disgusting.
It's not disgusting.
Liquidate all of your desserts into a drink. Like, if I'm going to, I don't want to drink my calories. Sorry. I want to eat my calories.
So you don't like milkshakes?
No.
So you don't like milkshakes
at
all?
No, I never get a milkshake.
Never?
No.
That's a lie. I have seen you get milkshakes.
I take a sip of yours. I don't ever get milkshakes. I will get something with a spoon so I can scoop it into my mouth.
Well, let me tell you what. A lot of people do like milkshakes.
That's
and they're
a lot
very
of calories
popular.
And all you're doing is sipping.
You're doing the exact same thing.
Wouldn't you rather be putting a spoon to your mouth?
If you put two scoops of ice cream on your plate with a piece of cake, what's the difference between doing that and throwing all those in a blender?
Ew. Victor, because I like the texture of the cake and the frosting, and I like to scoop a little bit of ice cream and a little bit of cake.
Their own, and I do not criticize you for eating.
You're criticizing the cupcake thing.
No, I'm not. I'm criticizing the crumbs. That's what I'm criticizing. It seems
like you admit that it's a good idea.
I never said it was a bad idea. I mean, I think it's weird. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's not a bad idea. It's a bad idea in my house. I mean, if you want to, it's a good idea in somebody else's house. Also, and I do not criticize you eating cake and ice cream. So don't criticize me for blending my cake and ice cream.
Yeah, you don't like cake just like plain.
Not normally, no. It has to be really moist cake with a little bit of frosting. If not, I scrape it off. Like, I'm very particular about my cakes. I don't really like frosting. So.
How did I end up with someone that doesn't like cake?
I do like cake. I just am not a big fan of frosting.
Okay.
And I don't like a lot of cake. I just like a little bit of
cake. I know. And like, cake is
I'm
not
I'm sorry
something
that I don't want to eat a sheet of cake. Wow. So horrible of me.
No, but if I make a cake, you don't eat any. So I have a whole cake by myself. That's not good.
Same thing with the Rice Krispies you made the other day. Yeah. And see, okay, so Nicole, this is what it is with Nicole, right? She'll make stuff that she knows that I don't really eat, and then she'll try to make it so then I eat it, but then she gets mad that I don't eat it. Prime example, Rice Krispies. She's made them before at the house, and I didn't eat them, right? I maybe ate one just because she was like, oh, you're not going to eat my Rice Krispies? So, you know, I eat one. And then she has to go take them to her parents' house. And then now she made a huge thing of Rice Krispies with leftover cereal that she hadn't eaten, and then surprise, surprise, guess who's not eating them, you know?
I made an apple pie last night, too. You ain't going to eat any of that, are you?
Nope. I'm not a fan of pie, let alone apple pie.
Okay, I'm just going to say, I'm going to put this out there. It is very difficult to know that I am marrying someone who doesn't enjoy eating the same things I eat, because at a restaurant, that's fine. At home, our grocery bills are outrageous.
No.
Yes.
No.
And
so, we make it work, though.
It's hard.
It's not that hard. See, in Nicole's mind, she gets frustrated because she knows exactly what I like, but she doesn't want to make it.
We talked about this. I'm just saying, like, cooking for one, cooking a cake, it comes in a box. It's one size.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just, like, I mean, I guess I can start... I don't know how you do that. Divide up the batter and cook a mini cake. Like, it's just, I sacrifice a lot and you sacrifice a lot because I can't make a big, I don't like cookies and cream ice cream. So, like, buying it, I know you're going to eat the whole thing by yourself.
But we haven't gotten cookies and cream. We try to compromise. Last time, okay. So, Nicole says that, like, we went to the store and she goes, what ice cream do you want? Oh, cookies and cream. And she's like, no.
I hate cookies and cream.
Okay, so don't pretend like we buy cookies and cream ice cream.
We met in the middle with cookie dough, and you ate it all anyways, because I don't even really like cookie dough that much.
Then why is that you're compromising? Then that's not even compromising.
Because I can tolerate it.
Oh, my gosh.
This is just, it's hard. So now what we need to do is we're both buying what we like.
You know, this is the original. This is where all the problem stems from. Anybody in a relationship, this is 99% of the time, this is the problem. What you have to do is you got to communicate with the other person, which I do. I tell Nicole, I like this. I don't like this.
No, all of a sudden today he doesn't like cheese.
And no.
This is something I have never heard before. And I just bought him 2 blocks of sharp cheddar cheese.
Okay. Nicole, I eat cheese on occasion. You don't have to buy a whole 2 blocks of cheese for... I like Parmesan cheese on my... Anyway, this is going on a complete different direction. Let me digress. Yes. The Spanish word of the day. Spanish word of the day is bizcocho.
Bizcocho.
Bizcocho. Bizcocho.
Starts with a B or a P?
B.
How do I spell that?
Bizcocho. I mean, I think it's irrelevant how it's spelled. You're not doing a spelling bee.
Biscuit.
Cake.
Oh, dang, that was close.
Yeah.
That was food.
Yeah, yeah, you're right on track there. So close. All right, so now we're going to go into the reviews because you guys are so awesome, and without you, there's no us, and this is our little way to repay it back to you by reading your reviews. This one's by Sisters Forever 5. Helped me recover 5 stars. I had to have an appendectomy last Friday. A little scary having to go to the hospital with the COVID-19 situation. I started listening to this week's episode while waiting for my CAT scan results. Great distraction. You two always make me smile. Appreciate all that you're doing during this quarantine to help brighten our days. Especially love the video of Vic doing your makeup. Wish nothing but love, happiness, and blessings for you both. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Amy.
That was very nice of you. And Nicole had a lot of fun with that makeup. You looked great, by the way.
Yeah, okay. This one's from Lauren McDonald. Love y'all in this podcast, 5 stars. I love this podcast. I was a huge fan of both of you on Big Brother, but am a bigger fan of y'all outside the house. This podcast is so genuine and makes me smile each time I listen. Absolutely love the variety of people that come on. Listening to this podcast makes my long drive home on the weekends pass so much faster and makes them more enjoyable. I love how the both of you are so relatable and true to yourselves.
Oh, that was very sweet. Thank you so much. And if you want us to read your review, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe on the Apple Podcasts app. That's the easiest way to do it. You can listen to this podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. And you can always go to www.cococalientepodcast.com. And you can also check out our merchandise there. Don't forget to follow us at Coco Caliente Podcast on Instagram and at Coco Caliente Pod on Twitter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.